Hello, and welcome to The Mirror Project. We are your hosts, Alexandra
and Christine,
and we are so glad you're joining us. Today, we're going to be discussing St. Patrick's Day, as it is right around the corner, from the legends of the Catholic saint and his missionary work in Ireland to the holiday and celebrations we know today. As we are both of some Irish descent, this episode was the perfect opportunity to research, learn more about the day, and share what we learned with you.
Before we dive into today's topic, like, subscribe, or follow us on your preferred listening platform. Go ahead, pause, and do it now before you forget. Don't worry, we won't get started without you.
So, Christine, why don't we get into the legends of St. Patrick and what was the history around it? Because I know you did quite a lot of preparation for this episode. So how about you share with us all?
Sure.
And we will be your pupils.
Okay, happy to. So I can't recall if I've mentioned this in previous episodes, but in addition to also being of Irish descent, I also went to Catholic school pretty much my whole life. So I learned about St. Patrick at one point in school, but it was definitely not the real version. So I was very interested to learn more and have uncovered quite a bit of info to share. So who was Patrick? Patrick was born in Britain and grew up a very spoiled, rebellious young Roman citizen while living a very luxurious life in 5th century Britain, probably near the Hadrian Wall of northern England. They don't know for sure, but that's where they think he was from. His father, Calpurnicus, is described as a decurion, which is a senator and tax collector. I did not know. I've heard of deacon, which he also was in the Catholic religion, but not a decurion.
I feel like we're pulling out some ancient Roman history or something from the textbooks.
Yes.
And I was like, oh.
And a fun fact, it's been suggested that his father took on the role because of the tax incentives. And there's no evidence that Patrick came from a particularly religious family, which I thought was also very interesting and makes sense. And you'll find out more in a minute. At the age of 16, he was kidnapped from his family estate by Irish raiders and sold into slavery and taken to Ireland. And for 6 years, he endured brutal conditions and watched over his master's sheep on some mountain in Ireland. So another fact that I found interesting was that when he was taken to Ireland, he was an atheist. And while enduring those years of slavery is when he did turn to his religion and heard what he believed to be the voice of God. And in a dream, learned of a ship that he was to escape on and fled from his captor and headed back to Britain. There was a whole long journey that was involved, but for the sake of giving you the highlights, I'm going to skip that for now. But I encourage anybody else who might find these facts interesting, please dive in. There's so much to learn.
I'm sure.
So, yeah, he finally, after 6 years, escaped from Ireland, heads back home, where he is welcomed back warmly by his family. And they all assumed that he'd take up his life of privilege again. But Patrick felt called to do something different. He really found purpose in his religion and felt called to a mission, which was to bring Catholicism to Ireland. So that's a little history on who Patrick was before he became the saint we all know today.
That's a great point, because I think it would be awesome to talk about more the legends about St. Patrick, right? But also, so he felt he was called to missionize in Ireland. But what was Ireland like before Christianity really touched that part of the world? Did you find anything else about that?
Sure. So I'll make this one point first, and then I'll give you a little background. Patrick was not the first missionary to try and bring the Catholic religion to Ireland, but he was the most successful. But a little background into what Ireland was like before Christianity. So the Ireland that Patrick was forced into, kidnapped and taken to, was nothing like where he grew up in Britain, which was at the time part of the Roman Empire. Dozens of Irish kings ruled the countryside with the help of headhunting warriors, which these kings would dispense to do their bidding. And additionally, there was also Druids guiding their followers in a religion filled with countless gods and perhaps even the occasional human sacrifice.
I feel like we could totally dive into a couple episodes on pre-Abrahamic religions around the world and what places like. So I would love to stick a pin in that for another day. Sure. Because that would be so cool to talk about. But
agreed.
More about pre-Christian Ireland.
Sure, absolutely. Another interesting thing I learned was that Irish women were nothing like the women he grew up with in Britain. And early Ireland was not a world that was perfect for women by any means, but an Irish wife could at least control her own property, divorce her husband for a number of reasons, including if he became too fat for sexual intercourse.
I have many questions about that.
I do too.
That was the defining reason of...
That was one of them.
Anyways.
That was definitely one of them.
Okay.
But Irish women who were slaves did face a very cruel, grueling life. And time and again in his letters, Patrick writes about his concern for many enslaved women of Ireland who basically endured brutal beatings and abuse on a daily basis. So it definitely was interesting to see how women were treated in Ireland. But if you were a slave and a woman, it sounds like you were treated significantly worse.
Mm.
So
yeah, and bringing up kind of not a topic on the history of like Irish and Irish tradition, but I remember from our trip to New Orleans a couple years ago, we learned that Louisiana was settled under French law versus British common law, and they also had more rights to property and divorces and business. So it seems like, I'm guessing, I would have to do some research into this, that a lot of British law comes from Roman tradition, and that women might have had better opportunities in other cultures, knowing that no one is perfect above all else, because it seems like as though they had some benefits and could at least divorce their husband for a number of reasons, but one really interesting one that was not necessarily the benefit for all. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are some of the legends, Christine, that we have heard about and are common for us to know about St. Patrick's today? Are there any truth to those, or are they just stories people have perpetuated?
So, yeah, the ones that he's probably most famous for and ones that you probably have heard, even if you're not Catholic or of Irish descent, are most likely false. So we'll start with one that I brought up to Alexandra when we first started talking about this episode, which was that he miraculously drove all of the snakes of Ireland into the sea. That is 100% false. There was no snakes in Ireland, and actually come to learn that was most likely in reference to him driving out pagan religions that were honestly before he came in and before Catholicism flourished in Ireland, ruled that country. And that's, again, a whole nother episode we could dive into around Catholicism and the pagan religion.
But an interesting use of metaphor in history, I guess.
Indeed. Another is that he used the three-leaf shamrock to explain the concept of the Holy Trinity, but is a nice story to tell kids, especially if you're raising them to be a Catholic. It definitely is a good visual, but that is 100% false. And I don't know if this is true or not, but Patrick himself wrote that he raised people from the dead and that the number could be as high as 33 people.
I'm sorry, and the church didn't have issues with that?
No.
I have many questions.
Well, as we know from the Bible, you know, Jesus raised people from the dead. I don't know if he raised quite that many people. Damn, Patrick. But apparently...
And then my next question is, how is that different from the pagan faith, like people before, like druids and things that they did? Other questions, I will
put a pin in it. We'll start a running document with all of our questions and try and make sense of it as we learn more. But yeah, so he raised 33 people from the dead, some to have been thought to be deceased for many years, which...
Maybe that's where we get the idea of zombies, you know? Because I'm assuming body preservation may not be what it is today or what it was in ancient Egyptian times for, you know, the pharaohs.
True.
So I have to wonder.
Well, another to your point about our trip when we went down to New Orleans, we learned that it was an actual job for somebody to sit outside of a person mm-hmm. who was recently buried in, I mean, if you don't know anything about how people are buried in New Orleans, they're not actually buried in the ground, but that was a job. Someone sat outside the tomb of somebody who was recently interned there and basically would wait around all day to see if someone was ringing a bell.
Yeah.
Because it was a thing that people were accidentally buried before they passed.
I think, and that's not just specific to New Orleans either. I think in many parts of the world that mostly I think Western cultures, I'm thinking more England and the States, where they would tie like a string to a finger or some ligament mm-hmm. and somebody would have like a night shift at a graveyard and you know, a body moved and, you know, wasn't actually dead yet.
Yes.
It would pull the string, which would ring the bell so people could, I guess, come unbury them. But I don't know, I'd be a little mad if my family buried me before my time.
Yeah.
I'd be like, hey, are you trying to get rid of me? I mean, I guess it's better than, you know, being lit ablaze, but...
Yeah, definitely my worst nightmare. I would literally, like, that is... a fear of mine is being buried alive. So
kind of sad to think that it was common enough that this was a regular practice. But had you been in Ireland, you might have been one of the 30, potentially 33 people to come back.
Right. Also 33. I don't know if there's anything in that number. Sorry, this is a little off topic. Three leaves on the shamrock is Patrick's number three, and they just associate different numbers with it.
The Trinity, three and one, the triquatra, you know, anything.
But yeah, so that's a little bit about the history of who he was, the legends that he's known for, and what Ireland was like before Christianity became so widespread throughout the country.
It's very interesting to kind of see, I guess at one point, legend and history were almost interchangeable, I guess, in some ways. It makes me think about, you know, what we learn and being very curious about different topics and then wanting to go explore it on your own because you're interested in, not because you're being lectured at in a, you know, in a classroom or in Sunday school. So that makes me think, just interesting. So Christine, you have shared so much about the history of St. Patrick, who he was, how he started to missionize in Ireland, which is so interesting, kind of that mix between history and legend, right? And what we know today. What in your research did you find about the holiday celebrating St. Patrick today in the world? Is it just something predominantly for those in Ireland or those of Irish descent around the world, or what has it become? What did you find out?
Yeah, so I was really intrigued to sort of see how is St. Patrick's Day celebrated globally? Because here in America, mm-hmm. here in the States, it's a big day. And what I learned is that St. Patrick's Day is not necessarily about the saint anymore. It's more a day of Irish pride and culture and celebrating mm-hmm. that heritage. So here in the States, it's a really big day. There's parades and a lot of people drink and party and partake in dancing and all of that. So I wanted to see if it was just as big around the world. And mm-hmm. I was happily surprised it is. It's celebrated worldwide in more than 200 countries. And they celebrate by parades, festivals, music, dancing, food and drink. So it was nice to see that it's a day celebrating Irish culture for those of Irish descent living in other countries. It's a way for them to celebrate that part mm-hmm. of their heritage. And I dug a little deeper because I wanted to see how big is St. Patrick's Day in Ireland. And it is a big day for them, although they don't necessarily celebrate, I think, how we do here in the States. But again, I feel like Americans have their own special, they add their own special twist to everything. I say that with all the love in my heart for this country that I live in, but we know how to really make things our own. But in Ireland, they celebrate with festivals, dancing, singing, partaking in Irish dance, and lots of food and drink. So it's definitely a day of pride for all people of Irish descent.
That's so cool. I love that you bring up dancing because I've only ever heard it called Irish dancing, but I don't know if there's a more traditional name for it.
Me too, actually. I'm not sure.
In some ways, it makes me think of tap, but almost more structured, right? Because of how still Irish dancers keep their upper body. And
yep.
I think what was it, Riverdance, that company mm-hmm. and show that really kind of revitalized and modernized some of the Irish dancing for a larger audience, which right. is so cool because I think, I don't know, I find joy in watching it. It's so interesting to see how people yeah. can match up their steps and how high they get their legs while keeping their body so straight. It's and it's just amazing. As we have talked about that, we met on a dance team at college and it wasn't through the dance team, but in the co-ed fraternity that I was in at our university, somebody, an older girl in the fraternity, she did Irish dancing for a long time since she was a kid. And I remember I got to see her. I think there was a talent show or some sort of exhibition somewhere on campus for something. And she did it. And I was like, this is so cool. And I have never done that kind of dancing in the years that I danced. What about you, Christine? Did you ever attempt and try?
Oh, I'm sure I attempted. Because at one point, my parents took my sisters and I to Lord of the Dance, which was another Irish dance show similar to Riverdance. They came here to New Jersey, to the New Jersey Performing Arts Center. And at the time, you know, I was still very much training in ballet and loved to dance. So I was like, how hard can it be? Let me see if I can figure out how to do this. But I don't have any formal training. And I could be wrong, but from what I have heard over the years, the reason why Irish dancing, your upper body is so stiff is because I believe at one point in Ireland, dancing was against the law. And so when people got together, and I could be wrong, I haven't, in my research, this didn't come up, but this is just what I recall learning at some point, mm-hmm. you know, the reason why the upper body is so stiff was when people got together at gatherings, they created a dance that from afar looked like they were just walking around. I don't know if that's true, but it's an interesting thought. It definitely speaks to why the upper body is so stiff. It's certainly very impressive when you see people right. dancing like that. It's very impressive.
And the height they get for some of the jumps with the yeah. the legs crossing in the air mm-hmm. and stuff. I don't know. I really enjoy watching it.
Yeah. I'm going to do a little research after this conversation to see if my point about dancing being outlawed in Ireland to be true or not. Yeah. But I don't know. Yeah. Just someone told me
maybe
that
that's
once.
A topic for another episode. The history of different dancing styles around the world or how dancing has been outlawed in some places and not in others. And for anyone listening out there, as we've mentioned, this is our first history episode and we are clearly learning our way around how to do one of these. But if you guys are interested, definitely send us a DM, leave us a comment, or shoot us an email about things you would like us to look up and talk about. But all that said makes me think of when I was really young, a baby, and even to today, one of the artists that really kind of calms me, and I don't remember if she's from Ireland or more of just in the like a Celtic genre, but Enya. I used to fall asleep to all of her music, and now it's just one of the most high vibrational, calming things. Yeah. Like if I'm having a really stressed out day, I just pop on Enya. Mm-hmm. My mom used to put me to sleep with it. And so it's one of my favorite things. So I think usually on St. Yeah. Patrick's Day, and I always remember to listen to at least a couple of her songs. But while we're talking about the day, I know you had looked up other countries. So what do other countries outside of the States and Ireland, how do they celebrate? What do they do?
So in Chicago, they actually dye the Chicago River green, which I hope today is not environmentally damaging, but I thought that was kind of interesting. And to actually see the pictures, I was like, yeah, that's green. That is lime green. But another popular thing throughout major cities around the world, like in London, the London Eye, in New York, the Empire State Building, Rio, Christ the Redeemer, countless places, they light up those monuments and buildings with green lights. As just like a beacon almost in celebration of St. Patrick's Day. One that was particularly interesting because most countries do this, they go green, they call it, for free. They just do it as in celebration. But actually in Sydney, Australia, they charged Tourism Ireland to light up the Sydney Opera House to be green, which I thought was, I don't know, this is what one source mentioned, but in 2014, the Sydney Opera House reportedly charged €8,000 to Tourism Ireland to do this, which is more than any other landmark. Now, this was what one source shared with me, but I believe all these other places
just
I mentioned,
they just
did it because, you know, I mean, especially here in New York, the Empire State Building. Mm-hmm. The Empire State Building, they are constantly, they change the colors for sporting events, for the holidays, like Christmas and mm-hmm. New Year. So I don't think they're charging anybody, but that was interesting to learn. So I'd have to dig deeper to see what that's all about, but it popped up, so I thought I'd share.
Yeah. So do you have anything that you do specifically on St. Patrick's Day to celebrate Irish heritage, or has there been something that your family has always done and yeah. you continue?
So growing up, my grandmother, my dad's mom, loved St. Patrick's Day. She loved any occasion for us to all get together and celebrate, but especially St. Patrick's Day, because that is a big part of her heritage. Mm-hmm. We'd all get together. She'd do the full feast with corned beef and Irish soda bread and cabbage and mashed potatoes and this whole lovely spread, essentially like her other favorite holiday is Thanksgiving, so I feel like this was Thanksgiving part two, almost. But she absolutely loved it, and she's what kept that holiday alive, I think, for a lot of people in my family. And mm-hmm. I would say today, you know, I'm not necessarily one to go out and drink and party, but, you know, I'd like to...
You don't do the pub crawls? No, the St. Patrick's pub crawls?
But I'll have a Guinness, or I'll enjoy some corned beef and Irish soda bread. And I'd love to, I haven't yet, but I'd love to attend a St. Patrick's Day parade, because that would just be so fun. Mm. So, yeah. How about you, Alexandra?
Usually, my mom would... We went, never made Irish soda bread, but we would pull out the corned beef and cabbage. And when I was younger, I used to dislike cabbage. But now I do. Although I think this year, you're not a fan?
Not really. I'd rather just have the corned beef.
Well, if anyone doesn't know, Christine will actually be coming to visit me and be spending St. Patrick's Day with us this year. So yes. Who knows? My mom and I might feed her cabbage. We don't know. It took me a long time to get it. And I have to... It's got to be cooked in a certain way for me to really enjoy it. Almost a little bit caramelized and has some chew. Anywho.
That sounds really good.
Although maybe this year we'll try some shepherd's pie, even though the origin of that is a little bit more of the British Isles. A little bit of ambiguity of whether it's Ireland or the British Isles, like Britain. So we might do that. But so that was food-wise what we would do. Not being Catholic or Christian, really, I don't go to any specific mass or service for that. So other than that, somebody in high school introduced me to the Dropkick Murphys and the group Flogging Molly. So I started listening to some of that, which really kind of just like makes me amped up.
It does.
So that's
yes.
kind of fun. But when I was a kid, I remember being in school and you had to wear green, otherwise you were pinched. And then there was a lot of lore about like leprechauns and... Mm-hmm. finding a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And so teachers would buy the big bags of the chocolate gold coins. Yep. And sometimes we'd have that. So that's a memory I associate with, you know, St. Patrick's Day. And so I have to think, I do have something green, so I can wear green this coming Sunday. And it's, you know, it just kind of makes me smile. And it's kind of sad that it takes one day of the year to make me think, I want to dive more into Irish culture and Irish tradition.
Sure.
But it's also a good reminder to keep pursuing.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. But that's kind of what we do. I like to go outside. I think if it's, you know, beautiful and sunny, because mm-hmm. it's more towards spring. We're starting to come into on the East Coast. I'm just being outside.
Yeah.
So it makes me think of that.
That's nice. Speaking of being outside and... The clover being associated with Ireland, I believe it's actually mm-hmm. the country's flower. So that's another thing I learned. But have you ever found a four-leaf clover?
I don't remember if I have, but I remember in like phys ed class before high school, we would always go out like in the ground searching for a four-leaf clover.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I don't think I ever found one, but I think somebody else in my class
that's
did.
Cool.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah. I actually found one. I did keep it. I don't still have it, but I remember I was at my parents' home here in New Jersey, and we were out front, and my parents, they live on a pretty decent size of piece of land, and, you know, clovers were mixed in with the grass all throughout mm-hmm. the yard, and I remember finding it in our front yard, and I was so excited. I ran inside, and I showed my mom, and she helped me wrap it in cellophane, and I kept it for mm-hmm. the longest time. I had it in my room as just, like, a symbol of good luck. But, yeah, curious to see, has anybody else listening found a four-leaf clover before. Mm. Would love to know. And if you still have it.
Share a picture with
us. Because I wish I still had mine.
I'm sure you'll find them.
I'll just have to start looking again. I'm sure I'll be able to find mm-hmm. it.
And to anyone out there listening, if you want to share with us what your traditions for St. Patrick's Day and what you do, eat, and enjoy, we would love to hear that. So definitely send us a message and we may feature you on our social media.
Yeah.
Which would be a fun way to engage with you all and kind of further build this community. So in that, we've covered quite a lot,
yes,
Christine.
Do
you have any other things that we have absolutely missed and we have to cover?
You know, there probably is, but maybe we'll just have to revisit this again. You know, there was so much I was learning about this past week for this episode. And there's honestly, it was interesting because there's so much, but so much is also not known because this was back in the 5th century. But still, what I did learn, we just scratched the surface here. So I want to thank you all so much for joining us on our first history-focused episode. Alexandra and I really enjoyed learning the real story behind this holiday that so many people celebrate and party to today. Please let us know how you like this episode. We want to do more shows like this going forward and would love to hear your thoughts. Join us next week as we aim to define what bravery means to us. See you then!
Enjoying the conversations we're having and the topics we're discussing? Consider supporting us through our Buy Us a Coffee page. We greatly appreciate any help in creating this podcast we love so much. Link in our show notes and Linktree. Before we end, don't forget to like, subscribe, or follow us on your preferred listening platforms, and we'll catch you next time.